Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. You know, periodically we take a step back, look at the state of our democracy, and not only your right to vote, but whether your vote really means anything. In a judicial race in Wisconsin, right now, conservative activists have invested tens of millions of dollars in the hopes of instilling a candidate who will support a gerrymandering effort. I mean, this is Wisconsin, where the population is split roughly half and half between Democrats and Republicans, and yet the Republicans have it gerrymandered to where they hold all but two of these House seats in Wisconsin. And toward that end, Elon Musk has donated well over $3 million to the candidate of the Republican's choice, as well as several times that much to a couple of political action committees there. That race presently is deadlocked. As of yesterday, it was 47% for each candidate. And it sports over $1 million in donations. I'm sorry, $100 million in donations. Moreover, the president has surrounded himself and packed his administration with election deniers and has been busy dismantling the guardrails protecting voters and voting. The question tonight is, what forces are at play that threaten democracy in America or throughout the world? Are they taking hold here or there? Are we feeling that leadership is ineffective? Are we not liking the choices we've made? Are we not liking the choices we have? Are people feeling too detached from our political leaders? Does the media factor into all this? Is it disaffection with the elections themselves? Is some other form of government starting to look attractive? Even before the polls closed in the 2020 presidential election cycle, former attorney, former professor, and advisor to President Trump, John Eastman, on this very program, went on a rant about election fraud. His claim predicate to efforts used to attempt to stop the certification of the presidential election. Some think it's time the public have a better view of the sausage being made and the way that their votes are counted. What could be more important than to stop where we are, take a look at just how we got there and how we can make it better? So tonight we ask yet again, what just happened? How did we get here and what's next? And perhaps most importantly, what are you going to do about it? You have to get in on this conversation. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. We have very qualified guests. They're here to educate and inform, perhaps even entertain. But they're not here to give you legal advice. And the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, of National Public Radio, our underwriter, the Bar Association of San Francisco, or any of their employees. We have some phenomenal guests. Of course, our most important guest is you. But joining us tonight, Brent Turner is a civil rights activist specializing in elections and regarded as a catalyst for the recently deployed open source systems in New Hampshire and Mississippi. Brent is featured in the award-winning documentary, The Real Advocate, The Real Activist, with former CIA Director R. James Woolsey. Richard Painter is an American lawyer, professor, and political candidate. From 2005 to 2007, Mr. Painter was the chief White House ethics lawyer in the George W. Bush administration. He is the S. Walter Ricci Professor of Corporate Law at the University of Minnesota and since 2016 has been vice chair of the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, a corporate watchdog group. Richard's been affiliated with the Campaign Legal Center, a group that is a frequent critic of the Trump administration. I could go on with these two guests, but let me rather instead welcome them. Richard, Brent, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
You know, before we go much further, we've kind of taken it upon ourselves at times to ask the big question. It's hard here. There are so many big questions, whether it's firing the head or trying to fire the head of the Federal Elections Commission, a power never granted by Congress to a president, or taking over the post office to try to exercise some control over vote by mail, or the big money that's taking over current elections, as the one I mentioned, or talking down election results and not wanting to accept them, or even just recently telling a Republican audience that where everything was fine, he later came back and said, well, obviously it's not right. They must have done something because we really won much bigger than that. What's the big story here? I mean, what one item, if there is just one item, is really undermining the meaningful nature of our elections?
Richard, Professor, please.
Yeah, I think that the public has less confidence in how elections are conducted. The biggest problem is the amount of money that's coming into politics thanks to the Supreme Court decision in Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission back in 2009. You've got these billionaires dumping more and more money into politics, and it's just accelerated in recent years. We saw what Elon Musk did in Pennsylvania, lining up voters before the 2024 election with $100 payouts for registering to vote and lottery tickets and the rest of it. And now he's going to be doing some of the same type of antics in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race and in other places. And voters feel that they are increasingly disenfranchised because that their contributions to campaigns, their hard work for candidates, their small-dollar donations don't make a difference. But I caution everyone that cynicism can make the problem much worse. If people are cynical about how the system works, then they're more likely to believe lies from either side about how elections are stolen and how the results aren't correct. And I think we could have a drift toward authoritarianism. And it's very important to resist that. As imperfect as our Republican system of government is, electing presidents and members of Congress and other elected officials, we need to continue to have faith in the American Constitution and continue to go to the polls and work for our candidates and try to clean everything up.
And let me jump in for a moment before I jump to our first call. You made reference to Citizens United, and for those who haven't been following it, that's a case where the United States Supreme Court said campaign contributions are akin to free speech, and they applied it to both labor unions and to corporations. So apparently the constitutional rights, at least to free speech, extend well beyond our rights as individuals.
Well, yeah, they said the money is free speech. So whoever has the most money, I guess they get the most free speech. These are contributions not directly to the campaigns, which technically are still regulated, but they're to dark money organizations that support candidates or attack candidates and super PACs and other organizations. Sometimes there's transparency who donates to those organizations, sometimes there's not. And it's an enormous amount of money coming into our elections and generating TV ads, radio ads, lots of social media activity going on in the past few elections. And this is what's driving, look at a Wisconsin Supreme Court race. If you got Elon Musk getting in there and trying to influence who the voters are going to choose, and they want to listen to whatever stuff he wants to put in the social media, wherever, that's where we are. But the voters need to be educated about this and how a lot of these communications are no better than the phone calls, random phone calls you got asking you for your credit card number. People lying to you, trying to get your vote. And, you know, I think that the voters need to understand that and think about who they really want to represent them or who they really want to be on their state Supreme Court, and not just choose somebody because there's some ad attacking the other one.
Thank you. And to your point, Richard, it's Brent Turner, to commend you for your stand-up positions previous to the debacle actually hitting the fan, and now staying strong for the people with your wisdom on these matters. I just wanted to mention to you, we're going to take our first caller, but I wanted to circle back on the other end of it and talk about the election systems themselves and how you've been helpful in that regard. So, Jeff, do we have a first caller?
We do. Let me turn it to Anna Marie in San Francisco. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Yes, I agree with the comments of your speakers, but I just want to hone in on one of the factors that has brought us to this situation, and that is that not enough voters know or act as if democracy is not a spectator sport. It is not a spectator sport. People have to participate. They have to vote no matter what the barriers. So too few people consistently who are eligible to vote do not vote. I remember as a kid going to the polls holding my mother's hand. There is no way that I would not vote. I would figure out how to vote. Now, I know that there are many barriers for people, for example, who are homebound, but if we could conquer if we could educate, I think one of your speakers spoke about education. If we could educate people that they have to participate in the way that they can, I think we'd be in a better place. That's my comment.
Thank you. We've been making similar requests of people. We've been talking about this for some time. We've had former administration officials, ones that the ABA has placed in charge of trying to reaffirm people's obligation to vote, not just the right to vote, but try to reaffirm their interest in voting and instill that it truly is a responsibility. It's been an ongoing problem, and virtually all the law schools in the country have participated in trying to generate interest and try to keep us as a democratic system. It's apathy that will bring us under, not something that will be put upon us.
That's right, Jeff. And you know, there are solutions available currently to increase voter confidence and drive turnout. And certainly when we talk about the work that I mentioned that Professor Painter has advocated for alongside myself and as you mentioned in my intro, the former director of the CIA, Jim Woolsey, is to say the more transparent the system is, the more voter confidence will occur and the higher the turnout. Certainly there are technology solutions that will be likely at a certain future date. Certainly if we had the ability to vote on a cell phone, that would drive turnout through the roof. Unfortunately, we have security issues and public perception. Right now, the goal is simply just to secure the vote counting process at the ground level, at the precinct, at the tabulation level, and make sure that we're not giving Trump or anybody else the opportunity to exploit an inefficiency within the system and therefore to create chaos like we've seen surrounding this issue. So to conclude that thought, open source software systems with paper ballots have now been deployed in New Hampshire and Mississippi. We're hoping to get California on board, as all the work really was accomplished initially in California. But unfortunately, we've had what I would call a deficient Secretary of State who has failed to move forward with the technology appropriately. So we're caught in a situation here in California that harkens to the political structure, with Silicon Valley being a major donor to the Democratic Party, and we've got our own issues. But nationally, if we can get these better systems into the swing states, we'll have a better chance. And I appreciate Professor Painter's work on that issue.
Well, let me turn it to Professor Painter for a moment. And I would like your take on what Brent just said. Do you think that a major part of the problem is that people don't trust the way their votes are being counted?
Well, I think there's some of that. I mean, we certainly saw that in 2020. There was a lot of concern about the tabulation process that then became conspiracy theories, that President Trump took advantage of that to claim that he won that election. He clearly didn't. He won in 2024, but in 2020 he lost with 7-8 million votes to Joe Biden. And I think if you have the open source software and the paper ballots, I mean, you can prove who won and who didn't. And we don't get into this type of conspiracy theory, because that type of thing can take on a life of its own. And that's what happened leading up to January 6th of 2021 and the insurrection and all that. And a democracy really depends on people believing in objective truth. You can vote for the candidate of your choice, but one of them won, the other one didn't. Sometimes you have a really close election like 2000 between Al Gore and President George W. Bush, and then you get down to 400 votes in Florida, and people still argue about how if you counted differently, you might have had a different result or whatever. But the Biden versus Trump race in 2020, it was pretty obvious who won. And if you give conspiracy theorists, an opening, they're going to really run with it. And so that's why the open source software and the paper ballots are very, very important. And I get back to the main thing that democracy depends on people believing in objective truth. It's always been the extremists who say there's no such thing as objective truth, and every truth is just power and all that kind of rubbish. And it's a very dangerous way of thinking about the world.
Let me next turn it to Hallie in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you, Ali. I vote every election, midterm, special election, everything, and I'm in California, and have come to the conclusion enough times that my vote pretty much doesn't matter, and that basically if I didn't vote, the outcomes to most, at least national elections, would be the same, because it's always these swing states. I think we have to be really careful about saying things like, you know, people who believe conspiracy theories, because if you look at the actual evidence, there's a lot that needs to be talked about. For instance, gerrymandering. Appointing Lewis DeJoy, what happened to the mail system, how all the mail got slowed down. passing hundreds of voter restriction laws, just like 300 or 400 last year. All these things that undermine people's confidence in voting in this country. People are really angry about it. And the other thing I want to say is that I find there's a real lack of real in-depth discussion about Citizens United, and you have not just corporations, everybody thinks American corporations, but you have international corporations that own American corporations who are perfectly allowed to contribute under that ruling. Any sum of money, we have no idea how much, talking Russia, China, these huge interferences, and that's illegal as I understand it, and I would like your guests to clarify, but isn't that illegal under the Constitution to have isn't that considered foreign interference in elections?
Well, let me turn it to Professor Painter, and I think what Ali is asking is if you can give us an idea, where is the line drawn? We know we don't allow foreign powers to directly participate in the elections, but at the same time, if they own a company with an American subsidiary, what can they do to participate? Can they invest in somebody that they want to see win? I mean, at some point, these things are directly in conflict. Where's the line drawn?
Well, this is all, demonstrated. This is true. And this is what I want to emphasize. There are the conspiracy theories that are lies. Conspiracy theory, for example, that Donald Trump won the 2020 election and it was stolen from him. Conspiracy theory that some sort of Zionist conspiracy dominating our political parties. And those are conspiracy theories. Those are dangerous. They're absolute lies. Now, what we just heard here was about truth, objective truth. Fact of the matter is, Citizens United has opened up the doors not only for American corporate money, but for international corporate influence on our elections. That is a fact. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's objective truth. We have a system of campaign finance that needs to be fixed. Gerrymandering is also objective truth. That is not some sort of a critical theory or some weird theory. It is true. Just look at a map of the state of Pennsylvania. Just look at a map of many states. Look at those congressional districts and how they're cleverly designed to make sure that the party that controls the state legislature that can draw the maps can elect the majority of the members of the United States House of Representatives, even if the voters in that state would prefer the other party. And the maps just tell it to you right there. So I think it's very important to look for facts. If we lose our confidence in objective truth in facts, and, our democracy is in danger. And what we see, as I said, with foreign money in our elections, that is for sure. And we don't know how much. Why? Because those organizations that can spend unlimited amounts of money, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, do not have to disclose their donors.
Thank you, Professor. And I wanted to mention, this is a good time to plug a friend to the world of politics in California, and that is California Clean Money, are doing work on this point in California and trying their best. But, of course, it's a daunting task, and surely the work continues.
And it actually does continue tonight. We had invited them to participate tonight, and it looked as though they were going to participate tonight. But they, in fact, have a meeting organizing tonight, which has quite a number of facets that they're involved in. I did receive their newsletter a little earlier today. And believe me, California Clean Money is hard at work. What is open to them to do, though, is another story. If California passes, if California does pass legislation along the line of the Fair Elections Act, the kickoff to the Fair Elections Act, and they actually do have that that pass, will that pass muster under federal law?
Let me say that the interplay between the federal and the states regarding elections, and of course I'll defer to the professor, but you know, is quite an interesting one. And what we see is it basically coming down after reading through Trump's latest inroad to mess with the elections in the last 48 hours. It comes down basically for the public's understanding to the certification process of the voting systems. So if you continue on the current path, the current road we're on, and we have intellectual property protected software at the heart of the voting systems, the certification process will remain broken to the extent that you really have no oversight of the systems. If we move forward, the way it looks like, interestingly, the feds are moving, which is toward an open source software component, an accommodation there, so that they're actually allowing the certification process and the understanding of these systems to be led by the technologists that are forward-thinking and with best security in mind per the Department of Defense and NASA and the Air Force and others that utilize open source. If we move in that direction, then you will see the certification process evolve. And for the just the general layperson understanding that I try to advocate for the simple understanding of this mess is that if we can get this certification process in order and upgraded, then the systems that adhere to the VVSG, the new standards coming out by the EAC with the feds involved, that sends a message to the states, and then the states may very well move forward with upgraded security.
Let me turn it to David in San Francisco. Welcome to your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much. I'm thinking of the latest proclamation from Mr. Trump regarding registration by new voters, requiring them to prove citizenship, and also saying that mail-in ballots will not be counted unless they're received before the end of Election Day. And I have two questions. One is, do you think that such a proclamation will hold water constitutionally? And second, what actually effect will it have?
And I guess that part 1A, the first question, is this within the realm of presidential power, or would it require some greater level of involvement, whether it's bringing in Congress and having them pass a law that's signed into law, or would it even have to be a constitutional amendment to make those changes? Professor?
The states control their elections. There are, you know, some constitutional rules here. I mean, the states can't just raise the voting age. If you're 18, you get the vote. The states cannot discriminate on the basis of race, although, unfortunately, the Voting Rights Act is not being enforced as aggressively as it should. So there are some restrictions on what the states could do. But these types of restrictions that are being suggested by the president would need to be implemented at the state level. So if the state says, well, to register to vote, you need to prove citizenship, as opposed to just showing your driver's license or whatever, I mean, they're going to make it a lot harder to vote because you just have to go through the extra steps. And maybe the president does not want younger people to register to vote at age 18 and 19 because he doesn't think they're going to vote for his party there. That's one of the problems we have is that we think, gee, there might be some election fraud, and once in a while you have somebody who votes who shouldn't be voting. But this election fraud talk is yet one more of those conspiracy theories where people don't want to believe in objective truth, and they come up with the idea there's a bunch of fraud, so we're going to make it so difficult to register to vote that then you have a great many people are disenfranchised. Simply because of the conspiracy theory. And I've seen this for quite some time. The voter fraud rhetoric has been ratcheted up to try to restrict voting rights. And the more difficult you make it to vote, the more younger people are not going to show up at the polls. And there's also a disproportionate impact on racial minorities. And that's essentially anti-democratic, with what's being suggested there.
We're going to have to pause for a station ID. I'd like to invite both of you to stay on the line, David and Professor Painter, and we shall be back in just a moment. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So, David, I don't know if you had a chance to, if you feel that your question was thoroughly answered by Professor Painter. You want to hear back from Brent Turner as well, if you had some follow-up on that.
Sure. Let's hear from Mr. Turner.
Yes, David, I think you were addressing the what we call front-end disenfranchisement, the manipulation of the voter rolls, which is now, being bandied about by Trump in 2020. To take a slight bit of exception to Professor Painter's comments regarding 2016, I think we want to reference that. In 2000, Bush v. Gore, we couldn't get our arms around the vote count. 2004, the electronic systems came in, and there were some eyebrows raised there because of the lack of what we deemed appropriate technology with the intellectual property software being inherent. And then really 2016 raised many eyebrows. Many people thought that was perhaps, a Putin maneuver. And these systems do need to get tightened up. It's a strange tightrope that we walk when we talk about election system security, because we never want to disincentivize the public to vote and participate. But on the other hand, we want to push the politicos to upgrade the systems so that just in case a guy like Putin thought it was a funny trick to play on the United States to have Trump become president in 2016 rather than Hillary, we could protect against those sorts of shenanigans. And on the front end, the disenfranchisement, those systems themselves are based in technology and deserve a tightening as well. But again, we want to encourage people to vote. Just because you have looseness in the system, which is always going to be there, no matter what kind of system you use, doesn't mean that someone cheated and that the wrong candidate got elected. What we're saying is merely that you want to use the best systems available, and so that's our efforts. That goes to the database management system, the voter registration, and all the way to the tabulation.
I'm thinking in much more low-tech terms. I'm thinking that the requirement of proof of citizenship looks a lot like a poll tax or a literacy requirement, and that it's being imposed as an additional barrier to keep people from voting.
Historically, that's and certainly that is correct.
One of the things that we spoke of earlier tonight, you brought up California clean money, and we also spoke of money in politics. There. Project they're launching tonight, actually, I believe they're meeting in a half an hour. For those that are interested, they're unveiling the fight against big money here in California with a Senate bill they're sponsoring, which will be attempting to put on the ballot here in California the idea of fighting against big money by making public the financing for our local elections throughout the state. How do you feel about that? Does that seem to level the playing field, or does it potentially water down the First Amendment rights of those who really want to invest in their own election?
Well, let's see how they're going to make that public. I mean, they can make public the contributions directly to the campaigns above a certain dollar amount. We have that in the federal regime. We can go on and find out how much someone donated if they make a larger contribution. But the problem is an awful lot of money is these dark money organizations. They're just running ads attacking candidates and doing all sorts of stuff. And I don't know how you can get in into their records and find out who's paying for those without federal legislation, because those organizations cross the state lines and you have no idea where they're getting their money. President Obama suggested that we ought to have a lot more transparency I think the Supreme Court has never ruled on that issue. They just said that the First Amendment right for these corporations to follow these organizations. But the Congress never even tried to pass some legislation requiring disclosure about who's putting the money in. And it's a very bad situation. The amount of money that's coming into elections in California, everywhere else. And it was happening right there in San Francisco. Palo Alto, they had that Mind the Gap pact that Sam Bankman-Fried's parents were running. Barbara Fried had that. They put in a huge amount of money in elections in 2020, and turned out quite a bit of that was from FTX and was stolen from investors. I mean, this is a very, very bad situation. People putting all that kind of money into politics and expecting influence in Washington. And there you had a guy who was testifying in front of Congress just months before he was arrested. Now he's serving 25 years in prison for fraud. And they're all now groveling before President Trump to try and get him out. And it's amazing how much influence money, corrupt people, can use money to influence politics.
Professor, I wanted to piggyback on that thought and just ask you to take the gloves off for a second and give us, from your perspective, which is at a high level, what are your thoughts? Where do you think we're going to go from here? And can we get out of this mess now that we're in? I mean, we all want to stay hopeful. Are you seeing that these folks that now have taken control of the government, do you think they might just implode due to their ineptness? Or what do you think is going to happen next?
Well, we got a defense secretary who can't seem to hold on to the classified information. I mean, this is not working out so far, but, you know, we'll watch and see how everything goes in the Trump administration. But voters need to stay engaged and get involved in helping choose good candidates and keep an eye out for that big money. I mean, those big PACs, political action committees, whether money's coming out of Silicon Valley like that Mind the Gap pack and the people trying to buy Congress or anywhere else. You know, it should be really one person, one vote, not you get more influence because you have more money. You know, I think about where those people are spending their money and vote for the other candidate if you have to. We need to stand up to the big money in politics.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden, and tonight we're discussing, really we're taking a look at the future of our voting rights, the future. What does it take to keep your vote meaningful? My guests tonight include Richard Painter, lawyer, professor, and formerly the chief White House ethics lawyer for President George W. Bush. Also joining us is activist and voting advocate Brent Turner. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. 8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about your right to vote? You want to talk about spending money and what we should do to regulate it? If you want to talk about dismantling the safeguards, if you want to talk about talking down results, you can call regarding anything related to tonight's topic. You don't have to join in where we are in our conversation.
Jeff, to pick up on the legislative aspect, we talked about where California Clean Money was promulgating some legislation in California. We're also hopeful, just for the listeners' benefit, we're hopeful that what we're going to see in California is similar to what occurred on a federal level. We requested and were granted a bill by Kamala Harris, Senator, and Ron Wyden at the federal level to waive certification fees for open source software voting systems. And now we're hopeful that in California, with through maybe Josh Becker and others, that there will be a similar bill that will expedite the deployment of the open source voting systems. And I just wanted to mention that's in the work as well. So for the audience in despair, there is hope. And we, as Professor Painter mentioned, need to stay involved with our advocacy groups. I think there's obviously the California Democratic Party, but also Indivisible seems to be somewhat kosher out there and fighting the good fight, as you have to be careful who you align with as well. So there's issues there, but I think there are avenues where energy can be well spent. And of course, we're seeing people literally now taking to the streets, which I think is always good.
Let me turn it over to Michelle from Berkeley. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, and you're on the air. Welcome.
Okay, great. My question, I mean, I think it's exciting that you're having guests to talk about this, and I think the obviously I'm, well, maybe not obvious. I'm deeply concerned about the results of that horrible Supreme Court decision and, you know, excited about a clean money possibility in California. But I know that's a long road, or at least a tough road. But I wanted to know, as I was speaking about, you know, talking about some of these issues with someone, he commented that the in his opinion or his understanding, and he listens to different news sources than I do, that the Democrats get more big money contributions than the Republicans. And I was wondering if you guys have any sense, not that that actually is relevant to the principle and to the methods that you're talking about, but if you really have any sense of, you know, who are the, to which party, if any, is it sort of evenly distributed, or are some parties getting more monster contributions than others and dark contributions?
I think the tech bros playing heavy here, whichever way the wind is blowing in Silicon, or some have said Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I think that, because that's where the big money is coming out of. I mean, Professor, I want to hear your input, but you know, Elon and the boys and of course out of Washington, Microsoft and all that, they're driving the show here, and so they need to take responsibility. I think we've all been aghast at where we are in their participation. So, Professor, what are your thoughts?
Do you have a sense of which party is benefiting financially, just in terms more or less, or is that just a total mystery?
Yeah, both. You can look it up, but both.
Well, it depends. The money's going to go where the money thinks it can have the most influence. And Silicon Valley was generating quite a lot of money for the Democrats for a while, but I think it tilted toward the Republicans in the past maybe 2 years. They mm-hmm. weren't getting what they wanted out of the Biden administration. That was part of it. I go back to the story about the Mind the Gap Pact that was heavily funding Democrats, that Sam Bankman-Fried's mother, Barbara Fried, was involved with. And a lot of the Silicon Valley people thought they could get what they wanted in Washington by buying off the Democrats. They didn't really get what they wanted. Sam Bankman-Fried got arrested. You see that the former dean at Stanford Law School was putting up the bail money. But those folks didn't get what they wanted, so they started looking at the Trump side and the Republican side. I think we've seen this with Elon Musk too, who used to give quite a bit of money to the Democrats. He's moved over to the Republican column, obviously. Zuckerberg keeps going back and forth, but he's clearly back with Trump, groveling in front of the president down there in Mar-a-Lago. Jeff Bezos and the rest of them. So You know, the big money goes toward the power. They want to put their money where the people win, and you know, bet on the winners, and then help them something in return. And you know, I think it's really important to stand up to that in all of those PACs. They've been run out of, whether it's out of Silicon Valley or anywhere else. I kept
May
quite
I ask
a close
a
eye on what's going
question?
On out there at
what
Stanford and so forth.
Can I ask a quick follow-up question, which is, what is the highest priority for these tech people? What is it that they want that they weren't getting that they think they can get now?
Well, it's power. It's about money and power. And then they came up with this crazy philosophy, a so-called effective altruism, which is a bunch of hogwash. The idea is, if I get more and more money, I can use my money to make the world a better place. A sort of extreme version of utilitarianism. Of course, it's very opportunistic, because the way I'll help save the world is to make myself richer, maybe even if I steal other people's money. And that's what a lot of that effective altruism was all about. But there were a lot of people walking around Stanford and some other places who thought that was actually a philosophical theory that made sense. There's a professor at Oxford who was talking that way. There's Silicon Valley really know from that. Gee, if I get richer, that'll help save the world. Obviously makes no practical sense.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Let me turn it to Ilsa in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Very well, thank you. Welcome.
Good, thank you. I was just wondering how they're going to decide whether somebody is legal to vote. Hello?
I'm not quite sure I understand your question. Are you asking, is there a better way to go about it than what they're saying? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, there are so many people in this country. How can they decide if one is a citizen or not?
So if I understand Ilsa correctly, and jump in and tell me if I'm wrong, both of my guests have had some concerns about the methods by which they're checking validity of voters. And
Right. There's
a legitimate function there. And the question is, if not by requiring all those things to register, is there a way to make certain that you can trust the voters and trust the vote without at the same time making it difficult for folks and discouraging younger voters or perhaps those that are illiterate or the like? Is there a way to let them be part of the system and still ensure that those people are voting that should be and not voting who shouldn't be?
Yeah, there's a
more or less.
Simple answer to this. Is it Ilsa? Ilsa?
Ilsa.
Ilsa, thank you. Technology is not always our friend, but this is not a heavy lift. This is not rocket science for the technologists of today. So there are simple database management voter registration systems that can be deployed that will create efficiency within these systems. Unfortunately, anybody that's ever dealt with vendors in the private sector, once you get them involved, you have a different situation on your hands. So right now, the system is a bit plagued by the vendor interaction part with the government. But if we can move toward better technology in all these systems, the registration included, it can become very efficient. So we're always at work trying to move in that direction. And thank you for your question.
Well, it leads up to another question, which is, Donald Trump is not a birthright citizen. So how come he's not excluded?
Well, some think he should have been excluded from being allowed to run for the presidency, or certainly taking the office of the presidency as a criminal, a convicted criminal. So there are lots of questions there, and thank you again, Ilsa.
Yeah, that's just, it fascinates me that he goes on and on about birthright citizens, and that's all he is.
Thank you.
You know, the irony is it doesn't matter the subject matter. He could talk about illegalizing lighters because he prefers matches, and the media is going to pay him so much attention that he's getting what he wants. And he's a true believer that there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Ilse, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. I hope we've answered your questions. And let me turn it to Mike in Oakland. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I'm calling about the election and the potential for electronic fraud. Going back to 2020, when Pennsylvania demanded a recount, I mean, the Republicans in Pennsylvania demanded a recount because they didn't trust the voting system, the electronic voting system. So they did do a manual recount, and it was bipartisan, you know, videotaped, and it proved that the machines were accurate. Now, in 2024, they turned it over to Starlink, and there was all these, you know, bomb scares in like 80 places in the swing states, and Trump even thanked Putin and Musk for rigging it for him. So shouldn't there be a system nationwide so that bipartisan videotaped and manual recounts can prevent any electronic voter fraud? And I'll take your answer off the line and just listen on the air.
Thank you, Mike, for joining us. And I think each of my guests have to really want to take the bit on that one. I'll start with Brent.
Yes, thank you for the question. So the answer is on that one that you want the first count that comes from the tabulators to be a clean, tight count. So once you have accuracy in your initial count, now we can start talking about the audit. Luckily, there are good groups out there that have conducted audits, and in the 2024 election that you mentioned, I think you mentioned 2020 initially, the audits proved up the initial technology count, and it was disproven that there was any meaningful manipulation there. In 2024, you raise an interesting question. Since these systems themselves are suspect, and there was no effective auditing of 2024, you bring up an interesting point regarding Starlink. Some may think that that plays into the conspiracy theory stuff, like there's things floating out in space that can communicate with the ground systems. And some very smart people are in conversation about these matters. We found it interesting that there is a maxim in the world of election fraud that is, if you're going to cheat, cheat big so that you get beyond the point where an audit is triggered. Because the margins are wide, we're not convinced of anything. I understand we have to keep the public confidence, but until we get proper software into the systems and demystify these issues like Starlink and others, I think it's best that we keep the conversation going and don't shy away from it. We thought it was inappropriate in 2020 with the Biden victory as Democrats to become cheerleaders for those voting systems that delivered the win for Biden. We thought that was a bad idea and a bad look. It proved to be appropriate that we were concerned because now when 2024 hits, it makes it look, since Trump has commandeered this space of election irregularity conversation, it makes it look like anybody challenging the results is loony, like he has been accused of being. So you have to be very careful. It's a tightrope that we always walk. But the good news is there is progress in that the better systems have now been deployed in New Hampshire and Mississippi, and hopefully California will fall in line soon.
Professor Painter, why don't you jump in? We've got a little over a minute left.
Well, I would say first that it is important to have open software and vote tabulation systems that can be verified and that people clearly understand how they work. There's been absolutely no evidence of fraud in the
counting of votes at all in any elections to date, but it is possible that it could happen in the future. If we had software, it could easily be hacked by the Russians or somebody else. We haven't had it to date, but we could. The even greater fear is that if the public thinks that there's something wrong with vote counting systems, then you get the conspiracy theories going, like what we had in 2020 that led to an insurrection at the Capitol. And the way to avoid that is to have the open source software, the open source software, and have paper ballots, have everything clear so you can prove who won the election. It's absolutely foolproof in case someone did try to figure out a way to get into the computer system, which is not what we want going on. And on the front end, we got to make sure that people are allowed to vote. These conspiracy theories about voter fraud are really being used as an excuse to raise the bar so high that young people won't register to vote, that minorities and others will be disenfranchised. And that's just not the American way. We cannot accept that. We need everybody out there and voting and participating in our democracy.
Let me ask each of you one question. It's got to be very short. We have about a half a minute left, but I want to ask each of you. We've talked about the money taking over the campaigns. We've talked about letting people better visualize how your votes are counted and really what happened with paper ballots or open source software or the like. Do you think that there's truly an issue with the guardrails being removed?
Well, the guardrails are going to be removed on our president if we allow him to. And I do think we are living in a very dangerous world where executive power could be abused. And I do think we need to focus on that right now. And then also how elections can be a check on executive power. And now we need to elect people who are willing to Congress, who are willing to keep the president in check.
Given our time, that's going to be the last word. Thank you, Professor Painter. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been talking about the meaningfulness of the American vote and how to maintain it, perhaps how to get it back. Our guest tonight, Richard Painter, lawyer, professor, formerly the chief White House ethics lawyer for President George W. Bush, and activist and voting advocate Brent Turner. Please be sure to join Your Legal Rights, where we're working on some very poignant programs. Next week, we look at the administration's encroachment upon the independence of the federal judiciary. In a related broadcast coming in 2 weeks, we close out this segment with a look at the war against major law firms and against the administration of justice. Best of all, as always, we take your calls and answer your questions. That's Your Legal Rights, Wednesdays at 6 o'clock. A big thanks to our guests and all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.